The United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres has chastised countries for failing to protect the planet, urging world leaders to act now to curb emissions.
The climate crisis is caused by us, and the solutions must come from us. We have the tools. Technology is on our side. Readily available technological substitutions already exist for more than 70% of today's emissions.
That's UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres speaking overnight at the UN Climate Action Summit in New York. With that call to action, Australia is being encouraged to develop a hydrogen economy to tackle climate change, but with one big caveat.
Obviously, Australia has huge potential for hydrogen. The only insistence that I think that we would make is it has to be green hydrogen. So it has to be hydrogen that's coming from solar and using physics and chemistry and not hydrogen that's coming from a coal industry, which really, you know, can't be part of the long-term future unless if we want to get to zero net emissions by 2050.
That's Rachel Kite speaking there, the UN Special Representative for Sustainable Energy. We spoke to her yesterday here on Breakfast. Well, Alan Finkel is Australia's chief scientist. He's in Adelaide this morning to deliver the plenary address at the 2019 International Conference on Hydrogen Safety. I spoke with him a short time ago.
Thank you, Hamish.
I want to get to the hydrogen, but I want to start with what Antonio Guterres has said overnight. He says the world has the tools to fix the climate crisis, but are we using them?
Look, we do have tools at our disposal. There is no question in order to fix the climate crisis, but we have to keep in mind that it's not easy. And to the extent that we can, we should use all the tools that are available to us. When I say it's not easy, you have to keep in mind that more than 70% of all the global emissions of greenhouse gases come from the global energy industry, the production of the energy that we need for transport, for heating buildings, for cooking, for running our electricity systems and our computer systems. So 70% of the energy of the emissions comes from that. So that's the sweet spot. We should be certainly looking at reducing emissions from energy production. But if you look at all energy production, so far, solar and wind only contribute about 1.2% of the total energy needs. Coal, oil and gas contribute about 80%. So it's a massive scale up that we have to do in order to replace coal, oil and gas with solar and wind. And I think that we can do it, but we have to use the tools at our disposal. So to use solar and wind, we need massive deployment of storage. We need massive deployment of interconnectors between the energy resource zones and the places that it's going to be used. And we need these to be long-distance interconnectors. We need storage in the form of batteries. We need storage in the form of pumped hydro. We need storage in the form of hydrogen storage. Now, all of that is going to take considerable effort.
Do you think Australia has the ambition to do that, though, I suppose is the question, because we are often criticised for lacking ambition when it comes to our carbon emissions and therefore the projects that we are rolling out in Australia in order to achieve that.
It's a mixed success record. I think that some of the ambition that we've shown in Australia has been very successful. The states have done and are doing more and more to incorporate renewable energy into the electricity system, and the expenditure on solar and wind in Australia, across Australia at the moment, is at world record levels if you look at it and on a per capita basis. The real challenge is the other sectors. What are we doing in transport? What are we doing in heating? What are we doing in industrial applications of energy? And that's difficult here. It's difficult elsewhere around the world.
Obviously, there is one speech that has been made overnight by the Swedish teenage campaigner Greta Thunberg, which has, I suppose, captured people's attention globally this morning. I want to just play you one moment from that speech.
You are failing us, but the young people are starting to understand your betrayal. The eyes of all future generations are upon you. And if you choose to fail us, I say we will never forgive you.
She's speaking there to the adults of the world, to the leaders of the world. As Australia's chief scientist, how do you respond to hearing that?
I understand the passion behind it. We need to do more. There is no question. But we need, as I was saying before, to use all the tools at our disposal. In Australia, that clearly is the adoption of solar and wind to produce electricity. But then we have to increase by 3 or 4-fold the amount of electricity that we generate so that we can use electricity for transport and electricity for heating. It's not always convenient as electrons. Occasionally, we need a high density transportable fuel. And so we can convert some of the electricity into hydrogen and use hydrogen for long distance, heavy duty transport and for energy storage. In other countries, they have the opportunity to use nuclear energy. They have the opportunity to use large scale hydroelectricity. And to the extent that we can, planet-wise, we have to be using all of the tools at our disposal. So what is also important is that the people who want to see the transition to a zero emissions energy economy are also willing to embrace solar farms and wind farms not far from where they live, and in some countries to embrace nuclear and large-scale hydroelectricity, because we need to use everything that's available.
Are you saying Australia should be considering nuclear?
No, Australia is extraordinarily well blessed with solar and wind, but not every country is.
And so
countries need to make decisions for themselves.
You're making this speech today in relation to hydrogen. Is hydrogen potentially a get-out-of-jail card for Australia?
It's a big piece of the transition to a zero emissions economy, but it's not by itself the solution. So what I and others envisage is that in the dream future where all of our energy comes from solar and wind as the primary energy source, around about 15 or 20% of that energy will have to be delivered as a high-density transportable fuel, and hydrogen is the ideal candidate. In other words, 80 to 85% of all the energy we need, you can probably use electricity directly. But in some cases, it's not convenient. So imagine a super ship that's going to take 100,000 tonnes of iron ore from Western Australia to China. It's very difficult for me to imagine that ship being powered by batteries, but it's very easy for me to imagine that ship being powered by clean hydrogen that will have the energy density to allow it to travel that distance with that cargo.
You'd probably be familiar with a report that was produced for the UK Committee on Climate Change, which advises the government there on emissions reduction strategies. It's downplayed the role of hydrogen in terms of what role it could play in the future. It says that, in fact, it's probably only a secondary or even a temporary role that it might play. Why are things different in Australia?
Well, actually, I'm not sure that I would agree with them for England. As I said, I don't see hydrogen as being the ant's pants. It's not the total solution. But at the 15 or 20% level, I see it as being part of the long-term solution. I mean, one of the things you need with solar and wind electricity is seasonal storage. We need to store solar electricity in particular that is generated during the summer in huge quantities if we're going to run big cities like Melbourne and Sydney on the product of that solar energy during the winter. And at the moment, one of the most prospective ways of storing massive amounts of energy for long periods, for months, for later reuse, is to convert that electricity to hydrogen. Store it somehow. It can be stored in liquid form in big tanks. There's a lot of opportunity to store it underground as compressed gas, and then use that hydrogen during the winter. So I don't see that as a temporary solution over the next 1 or 2 decades. I see it as a solution that will build over the next 1 or 2 decades into a long-term, viable, permanent contributor to the transition to a zero emissions economy.
And when we're talking about hydrogen, are we talking about the sort of green hydrogen that Rachel Kite, the UN Special Representative, spoke about on this program yesterday? Or are we talking about getting it from coal or gas?
Well, most of the interest is in getting hydrogen from starting with solar or wind electricity that is made without any emissions, using that to crack water. You'll recall the water is H2O, and if you crack the hydrogen from the oxygen, you separate it, you capture that hydrogen, you've now got hydrogen that was produced without any emissions of carbon dioxide. But the focus should not be on the technology used to produce it. The focus should be on can you get the hydrogen through a process that did not emit carbon dioxide during production? Now, as it happens, you can, in principle, make hydrogen with coal or natural gas as your starting energy source. And if you capture and store, essentially forever, the carbon dioxide that is the byproduct of the manufacturing process, then you have clean hydrogen. The trouble is...
So we're talking about carbon capture and storage here.
Correct, which has got a bad reputation and...
There'll be many people listening this morning that say, oh, we've heard about that one, and that's not the solution.
Well, quite rightly, they're cynical about it because carbon capture and storage for electricity generation has been done around the world, but not at very high efficiency levels and not cost-effectively. But when carbon capture and storage is done for large-scale hydrogen production, the projections at the moment, yet to be proved, are that it will be quite economical and that hydrogen produced by that pathway will be competitive with renewable hydrogen from solar and wind and can be done with virtually no carbon dioxide contamination. And the focus needs to be on carbon dioxide emissions to the atmosphere, not the technology.
You will have a job to convince the Australian public on that, won't you?
Well, and it's their decision ultimately. I think the majority of hydrogen will come from solar and wind electrolysis of water. But if hydrogen can be economically or more economically made from a fossil fuel pathway with nearly 100% carbon capture and storage, then I would hope that people are open-minded to looking at the end product, which is hydrogen produced without carbon dioxide. But I agree the majority of hydrogen will and probably should come from solar and wind electrolysis.
Alan Finkel, we appreciate your time this morning. Thank you.
Okay, Hamish, pleasure.
That's Alan Finkel there, Australia's chief scientist. He's in Adelaide today to present the plenary address to the 2019 International Conference on Hydrogen Safety.